What are some of the most misunderstood and confused aspects of Christianity, and how can we respond? Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion, is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November. Clearly Christian is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Clearly Christian. For many, it is just a fictional foundation or fodder for a horror story or a horror movie. They can think of, well, when they hear the word exorcism, they can think of the images of Linda Blair and the images of a priest standing in a darkened room with his crucifix. And for them, that's what exorcism is. And most definitely a thing of fiction, and most definitely a thing of, if it is believed at all, kind of a holdover, an anachronism from medieval Roman Catholicism. But is that true? And if you're trying to cover the increased request for exorcism, as in a recent story in The Atlantic, how do you as a journalist do that if you are at a loss to explain the religious basis, not only for the belief, but the practice of exorcism, both in the past and increasingly in the present? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about a story in The Atlantic on increased requests for exorcisms, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
First of all, is this just a Roman Catholic story?
Well, that depends. Let's take that on two layers. Layer number one, do you believe that the accounts of the demonic in the New Testament are real? That's question number one for people that want to think about this. And second, how do you deal with the emphasis on incarnate evil and supernatural evil that plays such a strong role in many events in the life of Christ, and not to mention all the references to evil and hell and everything else that occur in Holy Week? So once you've, if you've answered yes to that, you then have to say, well, the question now is, what do I believe are the manifestations of this in the modern world? So that's layer number one. Layer number two takes us to modern day Africa, in which the most rapidly expanding church in the world, perhaps, are various forms of charismatic and Pentecostal churches in Africa. But this would include Anglicans, Roman Catholics, and a bunch of others. And in Africa, in the context in which there is intense belief in the supernatural world, and also, frankly, in alternative gods, goddesses, demons, spirits, etc., the church there has had to confront this head on. At which point, then, I would ask people to think the questions. Do I believe what's happening with the church in Africa today is a fraud? Or is this, are these real situations that somehow express some blurred line between the material world and the spiritual world that would fit with a lot of what we see in Scripture? Now, if you've answered yes to both of those, you believe that what's happening in Africa is to some degree real, some of it may not be, but some of it is, and if you believe that the New Testament accounts are real and that they matter, this leads us to another question. Are Roman Catholics the only people affected by this? At which point, as I just said, with Africa, the answer is clearly no. At which point, I think a lot of churches and a lot of people in churches should be asking, okay, what does my church actually teach about evil, the supernatural, and maybe some of the dangers that the church has always explained as the presence of the demonic? How seriously do I take that? I think this is a question that modern believers should be asking themselves.
You say that the journalist who is trying to cover this phenomenon, the rise in the request for exorcisms, has some of his own demons to struggle with. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that journalism is an expression of modernity. And at some point, you expect to see people on both sides of this debate whether the demonic is real. You expect to hear people who say they don't think it's real, or you expect a lot of reporting from the perspective that this is all simply psychological, and that's that. This reporter, I thought, did a good job of getting a mix of voices, especially within the establishment Catholic Church, to talk about this. And he mentioned, for example, that the last couple of popes, including Francis, have been intense believers in the power of the demonic. And in fact, one of the most interesting biographical details of the man now known as Saint John Paul II, it was when the Vatican admitted that at several times, while serving as pope, John Paul II himself had performed exorcism rituals. Now, we also are following up on the fact that a number of years ago, there was a burst of interest in this topic when the Roman Catholic Church put out a new edition of the Guide of Rituals to be Used by Exorcists, which all of a sudden there was a lot of attention. I did a column about that time with a man who's a priest whose work was featured in a film, and no, not The Exorcist, but in another film. Except then that even raises some interesting questions, which essentially comes back to this. Why did the Roman Catholic Church stop ordaining exorcists, especially in the context of North America and Europe? Why is there a shortage of priests who are trained in these rituals and trained in kind of the spiritual art of detecting what's psychological and what might be way more than psychological? That's an interesting topic that the Atlantic article didn't get into it at all, which is kind of the doctrinal politics of all this, if I could put the word politics into that context.
Can you understand the trepidation that a journalist might have when someone says, his editor says, hey, I've seen these reports about increased requests for exorcism. Go write me 1,000 words about what this is about. Can you understand the trepidation there with about 30
seconds? Oh, sure. Like I said, journalism assumes modernity. And to a certain degree, I would say a lot of journalists assume that that means the material world is all that there is. We can talk about the origins of the movie and the novel, The Exorcist, later. I mean, but the key here is if you're going to say exorcisms are real and that they reflect some reality other than the materialistic world, what have you just conceded about the reality of the spiritual? And then that opens the doors to a lot of other questions for journalists.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a story in The Atlantic on increased requests for exorcism. He is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. We'll do some of that digging into the background of one of the more famous stories of exorcism. Then, it's This Week in Pop Christianity with Pastor Chris Rosebro. We'll talk about the New Apostolic Reformation's canonic Christology, wherein they say Jesus did his miracles entirely apart from his divine nature.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, Visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. This child, Jesus Christ, is the focus of every Christmas card that Emmanuel Press offers. Whether in stained glass, illumination, or classic works of art, Christmas cards from Emmanuel Press joyfully confess our Savior's birth with the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to create a custom assortment of cards, emmanuelpress.us.
We're talking about a story in The Atlantic on increased requests for exorcisms. Terry Mattingly is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Terry is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. If you appreciate our media coverage of religion segments with Terry, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Or give us a call, 618-223-8385. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. when you consider your year-end giving. Terry, before the break, you had mentioned the most famous, at least in America, the most famous exorcism story is a story that is at the basis, however fictionalized, of the Exorcist movie, and kind of brought the whole story of exorcism in from the Middle Ages to the 20th century and made it permanent fodder for other horror genres as well. What do we know about that?
Well, William Peter Blatty, who won the Academy Award for writing that screenplay based on his own novel, I actually had a chance to discuss all of that with him quite in detail a number of years ago. Now, he died a year or so ago, maybe 2 years by now. But I went out to lunch with him about 5 years ago and had a lengthy discussion of that and heard the entire story. When he was a student at Georgetown University, he was exposed to the transcripts and notes from a very famous exorcism. I believe it was in 1948 or 49, a much discussed case, and he was just really knocked out by that. Later, he was thinking about writing a story involving exorcism, and then something happened that pushed it totally into overdrive, and that was, quite frankly, that his mother died. The phone rang, he picked up the phone, and received the news that his mother had died. And at that moment, the writing of the book for him became a very interesting exercise in what he would call kind of a Hollywood apologetics involving his Catholic faith. He said he set out not only to write about a priest who was wrestling with grief over the death of his mother and wrestling with the doubts and fears that came with that. At the same time, The Exorcist became a lengthy description of the fact that if this other spiritual world is real, then what does that imply about the presence of supernatural good, virtue? In other words, if hell is real, and if we're dealing with things that look like glimpses into hell, maybe you need to stop and think about the Bible's entire description of the origins of heaven and hell and human choice and free will. Blatty told me that when the movie came out for the first time, a couple of weeks later, he began to get calls from contacts from friends of his that were priests and Jesuits in the LA area in particular that said people were flooding into confession after seeing this film, that they came out of the film, as he said, quite literally, the film scared the hell out of them, you know, and they felt that maybe I need to think about this. Maybe I need to think not just about evil, but about good. I'm reminded of the great novelist Dorothy L. Sayers, kind of one of the honorary members of the Inklings, the society with C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and others. Sayers once said that she thought the perfect form of Christian fiction was a murder mystery. And Blatty thought this was very similar to some of the strengths of the horror genre. The murder mystery, she said, is perfect for discussions of the material world and the spiritual world. She said, because the reader, the book opens with an event that the reader wants very strongly to believe is wrong, is evil, is unjust. And then someone proceeds into the world looking for evidence that leads to justice, which means the reader wants to see justice done. So by the end of the book, you've had to concede the existence of evil, and you've had to concede the concept of sin, and you've had to concede the concept of justice, and that good can be done. She said, that's a pretty solid chunk of theological material there. Blatty said exactly the same thing about the book The Exorcist. If you conceded to him the reality of supernatural evil, you've just conceded to him the reality of the spiritual world described in the Bible. Now you have to cope with what you believe about that or not. I thought that was a very interesting statement on his part.
So what was your general evaluation of the Atlantic piece? You were favorably impressed?
Yeah, way better than what I would expect. First of all, it was very long, and it included interviews with a lot of different people. One of the most important to me was a man that I encountered in a telephone interview a number of years ago, a priest who shows up named Father Gary Thomas, who was the subject of a book and then a movie called The Rite, R-I-T-E. And this was where I did see one hole in the story that I thought was a significant one. And I said that even as I praised the story overall. Let me read you one section of that interview I did with Father Gary Thomas long ago, or 5 or 6 years ago. Thomas said he thought it was interesting that there was a shortage of exorcists in the first place. And thus, with all of these requests flooding in, bishops were suddenly having to say, well, okay, we better train us up an exorcist. There was this quote. Truth is, stressed Thomas, the events of Holy Week, especially Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and Easter, make no sense without real demons, real temptations, and a real hell. But many Catholics disagree, unquote. There are plenty of bishops and priests who simply do not believe in Satan and demons, and they have told me so, he said. That makes a difference. What most people do not realize is that bishops are like independent contractors, and they can do whatever they damn well want to do. That's why we don't have many exorcists in America. Now, that's an entire other layer to this story. At what point within Catholicism, and I would say other churches, has belief in the supernatural and belief in realities of supernatural evil and good, at what point have people stopped believing in that? That's a really profound question. In effect, what do you do with biblical Christianity if you don't have the supernatural and belief in the supernatural?
So what was most commendable was the variety of voices that you heard in the Atlantic piece on the subject?
Well, yeah, the piece made it clear that while there might be some people who take the whole exorcism thing too far, that in mainstream Catholicism, they recognize that, I mean, they help exorcists learn how to detect when they're dealing with something that is a psychological phenomena and something that they then have to say, I'm not sure this is psychological. This looks to me like something that goes beyond something that can be explained with psychology and science. I could be dealing here with supernatural evil. So by saying that the church has found that the vast majority of these cases can be explained by science, the article kind of then had to face, well, these very same people say, okay, X number of these cases cannot be explained with psychology and science. At that point, the writer kind of has to look this situation in the eye, you know, and face the reality of this. There's a quote toward the end where Mike Mariani, the man who wrote this long feature, says, pore over these spiritual and psychiatric frameworks long enough and the lines begin to blur. If someone lapses into an alternate identity that announces itself as a demon bent on wrestling away that person's soul, how can anyone prove otherwise? Psychiatry has only given us models through which to understand these symptoms, new cultural context to replace the old one. No lab test can pinpoint the medical source of these types of mental fractures. Now, that's a journalist trying to wrestle with both sides of this equation, the doubts in the name of modernity, and at the same time, the evidence, I mean, including audio tapes, transcripts, and a host of other things, clinical cases that have been written down in detail, in which you look at these things and say, okay, I don't think we can explain this away.
Do you think that journalism has today, and maybe just kind of thinking of it in terms of the Atlantic piece, has the ability to approach it in the nuanced way that traditionally I think the church, the Western church, and I think probably the Eastern church as well, has? And that is to say, it's not either or. It's not merely a psychological, medical, physiological explanation, nor is it solely a supernatural explanation. The two travel together, so to speak. So an example, Terry, this last weekend I had an opportunity to speak with a man who suffers from a schizophrenic disorder. But he also understands, as a Christian, that it is well within the possibility that the devil uses this against him. And so he hears voices. Some of them he knows are just simply the fictions of his mind. And some of them, he says, the devil's trying to lie to me. He's speaking in very simple terms there. There's no either or here. Do you think journalism can grasp that part of it?
Well, this article was about as solid an attempt to listen to both sides of that debate as there could be. I faulted him for the fact that he didn't, well, maybe he didn't have room, maybe he had a word length, but he didn't explore the fact that that debate, which is essentially doctrinal in nature, that debate has extended right into the Roman Catholic Church, you know, in the modern age. Let me tell you something else briefly that the article does really well. It mentions the fact that there seems to be evidence that demons deal best or are most able to take over souls that have fractures in them, holes in the spirit. And it deals with two of them head on. And one of them is that priest after priest after priest reports that the extraordinary number of people that they believe are sincerely demon-possessed who have been sexually abused. And they say they're not blaming the sexual abuse on demons, and they're not trying to write that off automatically. They're saying there seems to be something unique about sexual abuse that fractures the human spirit. And in that brokenness, there is the possibility of invasion by the demonic. And then the article goes on beyond that to a second reason, in which it says, frankly, and this reminded me kind of Chesterton's, the paraphrase of Chesterton that's so popular. He said it in several different places in other words. The whole idea that when people stop believing in God, that then they'll believe in anything. There seems to be evidence for that in many of these cases, the article notes, which is that there is an increasing interest in the occult, in milder forms of supernaturalism and magic and a host of different other activities. And the article takes seriously the words of exorcists who say this openness, in other words, if you take God out of the equation, if you take traditional faith out of the equation, the attempt to put something else in there, in its place, might create another door through which evil can come. At the end of the Chronicles of Narnia, there's this moment where C.S. Lewis, there's this encounter with the other god, Tash, and I believe it's Aslan who says at that point, you shouldn't pray to other gods unless you want them to show up. That's that sort of an equation is taken fairly seriously in this article.
D- did the article deal at all with the contrast of the real incidents that stories may be based upon, or in this case, the church is being contacted about, and the fictional picture of the exorcism that has become, as I say, the fodder of the horror genre?
Well, there are scenes in real exorcisms that would make excellent material for horror movies. You might be familiar with a movie called The Exorcism of Emily Rose by the kind of progressive evangelical filmmaker Scott Derrickson, in which he did an entire movie and based strictly off court notes and on things that were under oath and testimonies. And that's a freaky enough movie as it is. I thought the article, like I said earlier, by taking seriously that the church helps priests recognize what isn't demonic and what almost certainly isn't demonic, and then it takes seriously, okay, well, how do you then believe there is a case that this has crossed the line and that the ministry of the exorcist is going to be needed in this case? That's described pretty much in detail. I mean, you could have given it a lot more space. But once again, for a work of popular journalism in a mainstream publication, I thought it was significant that the article placed a heavy stress on the fact that both sides of that equation are reported to be real by the priests and even some psychologists who have to deal with it. Like I said, the article, I didn't think the article was perfect, but I highly recommend that people read it if you want to understand this story. I would also urge Protestants, quite frankly. Eastern Orthodoxy takes all of this subject very seriously. But I would ask Protestants to say, this is interesting. What does my church actually say about this? I mean, if there was evidence that we were dealing with the demonic, am I going to have to call a Catholic? Am I going to have to call an Orthodox priest? Or is anybody in my church trained and skilled in knowing what to do in these cases? That would be an interesting question if Lutherans and Methodists and Baptists and whatever started asking that to their pastors.
Well, some of us actually have been. So
okay.
It sounds like if you were, with about 30 seconds here, if you were assigning follow-up or sidebars to this story, where you as an editor read it and you say, okay, but here's a loose end and here's a question that needs a simple answer, what would those be?
I would focus directly on the debate in Roman Catholicism about whether or not there needed to be an updated exorcism rite and the content of that rite. I'll bet there's some really interesting material there in the theologians and scientists and others who were involved in the creation of that rite. I would go right into the heart of that discussion, because I think that's where you would get the doubters and the scientists even that believe, no, this is something worth taking seriously. I'd go right into that equation.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for your time.
Glad to be here.
On the other side of the break, Pastor Chris Rosebro joins us. It's time for This Week in Pop Christianity. We're going to be talking about the new Apostolic Reformation's notion that Christ did his miracles without the benefit of his divine nature. It's actually rooted in a, well, Chris says it's a heresy about the nature of Christ himself. Stay tuned.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.